Well, A, Ukraine's not going to win this war. They're definitely not going to win it with 14 Leopard 2 tanks, A6 variants that Germany claims it's going to provide by the end of March, early April. 14 more Leopard A2 tanks that Poland's going to provide. Between 30 and 50 Abrams tanks, which aren't going to show up on the battlefield till the end of this year or early next year, or any other tanks that are going to be provided. The fact of the matter is, these tanks aren't game changers. The Ukrainians have been trained to fight in Soviet era tanks, T-72s, and their own T-64 updates, three-person crews. They're inheriting tanks right now. They're going to receive tanks that have four-person crews. Why? Because you have to manually load these tanks. So automatically, the whole concept of putting a crew in a tank and employing the tank is fundamentally changed. And if you haven't trained on this, if you haven't practiced on it, you're just getting into a system. It's like, if I brought you a Formula One car and you've never trained on high speed driving, and I said, Layton, take her for a spin.
Right.
You would be like a little old grandma and they're, you have no clue what you're doing. You don't know how to handle this piece of machinery. That's going to be the Ukrainians with this equipment. It takes 22 weeks to train an M1 Abrams crew member. I would imagine that the Leopard 2 tank is equally as complex a piece of equipment. And so Germany is going to provide 14 of these tanks in, 10 weeks time? So even if the Ukrainians were getting training right now, when they receive the tanks, they're not going to be trained on it, let alone know how to what to do with 14 tanks. If anybody thinks 14 tanks is a game changer, you have no clue what modern war is. These 14 tanks will be chewed up if they ever arrive on the battlefield. But the likelihood of all 14 arriving is slim to none because of the maintenance problems of these tanks. This is one of the things we talked about previously about the different infantry fighting vehicles that were being provided and the maintenance nightmare they presented. For the M1 Abrams tank, under ideal circumstances, for every hour of operation, you need 3 hours of maintenance. And that's with American crews that are actually trained, dedicated military occupation specialties of guys who go through the schools. They know how to do this, and they have the entire system backing them up. So in the United States system, we'll have a tank company up front, and the behind it is this huge system ready to back it up. With the Ukrainians, we're going to put an M1 Abrams tank company out front, and then there's going to be this thin little umbilical cord that goes back because there will be no direct support. If the tank breaks, it has to be removed from the battlefield, taken back to a place where it can be repaired. It's going to be very difficult for this tank to appear on the battlefield because the Russians right now are a little irritated, and they're going to put everything they have into interdicting these weapons before they get to the battlefield. But let's say they get to the battlefield and they break. That just means they have to run the gauntlet one more time to get fixed and then run the gauntlet again to come back. Every time you do that, you're setting up Ukrainians to die. And this is all that's going to happen. These weapons will have no meaningful impact. Just a news flash for NATO and all the NAFO fellas out there that are sort of cheerleading right now that this is a great thing. For the last 20 years, NATO and the United States have been focused singularly on Afghanistan and the Middle East. The last thing they've been doing is preparing for large-scale ground combat in Europe. The Russians have been preparing for large-scale ground combat in Europe since 2008. In 2016, they fundamentally reworked their organizational structures, and they're continuing to update them today for the sole purpose of closing with and destroying a NATO-style army. That doesn't just mean how NATO fights doctrinally, but the equipment. Every piece of Russian equipment that's in the Russian inventory today has been designed and is intended to kill NATO tanks. So if people think that the Leopard 2 showing up on the battlefield is suddenly going to scare the Russians, you're wrong. They're ready for it, they've trained for it, and they have the equipment to deal death and destruction. And for the Germans, I just don't know what's going through their brains.
Yeah.
The idea of putting German tanks on Ukrainian soil for the purpose of killing Russians. Man, that didn't work out too good the last time they did it, and it's not going to work out too good this time.
So they're going to be coming from Poland and all of these different locations. What do you make of that side from the Russian side of this now?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that the Ukrainian defense minister last month just straight out said that Ukraine is a de facto member of NATO, that the Ukrainian army is a proxy NATO force, and that Ukraine's willing to sacrifice its blood, but it must receive the equipment from NATO in order to carry out these tasks. So by his own definition, which then was, you could say, well, that's just an irresponsible, overenthusiastic Ukrainian official. Then you back it up with the meeting of the Ramstein contact group on January 20th, where all of the defense ministers of NATO and other nations who aren't NATO, like Sweden and Finland and such, got together and without exception articulated a similar theory of their involvement, that this is about a NATO war with Russia. The German foreign minister just said it straight up, right, to her European colleagues. Germany is at war with Russia. Let's be clear. Russia has every legal right to attack any place in Europe that is involved in the transfer of these weapons to Ukraine. By agreeing to transfer these weapons to Ukraine, every nation that has said, yes, this is what we're going to do, has become an active participant in the conflict. And under the laws of war, Russia can take them out. Now, here's the good news. Russia is simply putting a marker down and saying, you've just increased our target deck. We can do this. But Russia has been managing escalation from the very beginning. And the last thing Russia wants is to turn this into not just a de facto, but a de jure of conflict between NATO and Russia, because now it's nuclear war and it's over. So I don't see, at least in this iteration, Russia reaching out and touching Polish logistics centers, German railheads, Spanish tunnels. I don't see that happening because Russia doesn't need to do that. Russia's winning this war, hands down, and Russia's going to win this war, hands down. But Russia is letting NATO know that if by some strange set of occurrences, all this equipment showed up in Ukraine, and Ukrainians were able to assemble a mailed fist that threatened Crimea or anything else, that it's game set over. I mean, Russia will open up and unleash everything they have on NATO because NATO is an active participant in this conflict. And again, if you take a look at Russian nuclear doctrine, one of the conditions for the use of nuclear weapons is if NATO or a NATO-like entity assembles sufficient conventional military power that threatens the existential survival of Russia. So what NATO is seeking to do, they're not going to accomplish it, but what they're seeking to do is give Ukraine the ability to act as a NATO proxy to threaten the existential survival of Russia, which means Russia, if this actually occurred, would use nuclear weapons, not on Ukraine. They've said it straight up. This isn't going to be a tactical nuclear weapon against Ukraine. They're going to hit NATO. They're going to hit London. They're going to hit Berlin. They're going to hit Paris. They're going to hit Brussels. They're going to hit Madrid. They're going to hit Lisbon. Hey, Portugal, good job. You just made yourself a nuclear target. This is the reality. Now, the good news is Russia's winning this war and they're going to win this war. Russia's ready for this. They're prepared for this. But politically, this is an escalation. And imagine, put yourself in Russia's shoes. What NATO's saying is they want to kill Russians. They want to kill Russians. This isn't some mathematical game with tanks and steel and all this kind of stuff. It's not a computer game. This is reality. Now, I've said that what all they're doing is actually enabling Russia to slaughter more Ukrainians. That's the truth. But let's say that, because the blade of war cuts both ways. That's just the harsh reality of it, that the same blade you'd use to kill somebody is cutting you. And let's say Russia gets away with a 10-to-1 casualty ratio. That's a fantastic ratio, almost impossible to achieve, but they're doing that now. But let's say the new tanks come in and Russia sustains this, and they kill 40,000 Ukrainian troops, which is what's going to happen. Russia's going to lose 4,000 dead. That's 4,000 mothers, 4,000 wives, 4,000 daughters, 4,000 sisters, 4,000 grandmothers and uncles and brothers and sons that are going to lose loved ones. This is unforgivable, literally unforgivable. And remember, this isn't a war that was provoked. It's not an unprovoked act of aggression by Russia. This is something that has been planned by NATO since 2008 when they invited Ukraine to join, something that has been perpetrated by NATO since 2014 when Angela Merkel and Hollande, the French president, conspired with Petro Poroshenko, the Ukrainian president, to use the Minsk Accords as a shield to buy time to build up this NATO proxy army for the purpose of killing Russians. This has been going on since the spring of 2022. We now have the Ukrainian head of intelligence saying the peace agreement that Russia was sitting down in Istanbul to sign with Ukraine that Boris Johnson killed, it was a sham, too. It was never going to happen. It was designed to buy time to do what? To kill Russians. To kill Russians. That's right. All this is about. Right. And Lloyd Austin has admitted that when he came out in May of last year and he spoke in Warsaw and he said, we need to bring pain to Russia. Well, pain is a cute little word. It means death. It means dead Russians. Right. It means suffering. And you know, for NATO, the United States, Germany, Portugal, and all others to act on this desire can only generate hate on the part of the Russians. And Europe better pray that the Russians turn out to be a forgiving nation, because what Europe is doing right now is unforgivable.